Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan, here with Nathan. Nathan, what's going on, man?
Well, we just got back from Doctor Strange. That's kind of what's going on.
Yeah, that was a good time. Really glad we took the time to see it. We're going to go ahead and give a more comprehensive view of the movie, our thoughts and opinions of it. Probably the first 20 minutes of the podcast, we're just going to be more general and generic.
Spoiler-free.
Yeah.
We'll talk in depth about it, but we're not going to talk about plot details that would ruin the movie and things
exactly
like that. And then towards the end, because I think that'll be useful here, we'll get into a spoiler territory where we can discuss comic book origins. We're not going to talk about any of that because I know sometimes something that happened in a comic can be a spoiler.
Yes.
Even though it hasn't happened in the movie.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the end credits and things like that. So
exactly. And then probably in another 2 weeks or so, we're going to have Ian Reese Trick back on again. From Casey's Comics. He's going to come in and we're going to be talking a little bit more about it, just getting his thoughts and impressions on the movie as well. But for right now, we're just going to go ahead and dive right in. So Nathan, just let's just start out with first impressions of the movie. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, coming from that film critic perspective, I've been in the past kind of not hard, but I think I've reached a point with the Marvel movies where they are starting to, there's a sameness that's crept in.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that in the past, and the last Marvel movie I think we really reviewed was the first episode of this podcast, was Captain America Civil War, which when we saw it, you know, there are things about it I liked, and there were things about it that felt like it, a lot of Marvel trying to do franchise building in the middle of another movie results in something feeling sort of like a commercial.
Yes.
And I got that feeling with Civil War, even though overall, I enjoyed it and elements of it more so than some of the others. There was still that feeling that we're just watching a franchise being built and not a movie in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel seemed to have done better for the most part with its origin stories, mostly because, unfortunately, it seems like its characters only exist beyond one or two character traits. So once their story arc is done in the first movie, which usually involves someone being a jerk and then being less of a jerk,
yeah,
it seems like they don't have a lot character-wise for those people to do in follow-up movies. So it's not surprising that the movies I enjoy the most have been some of the origin movies. The original Iron Man I enjoyed, and Guardians of the Galaxy is probably still at this point my favorite one. So with Doctor Strange, there's a couple things coming into it. If you set the critic perspective aside, actually Doctor Strange has always been probably one of my favorite Marvel characters,
mm-hmm,
because when I was a kid, I did tend to gravitate towards those second or third tier characters that were interesting for different reasons other than they were just a superhero. With Doctor Strange, there's a lot of elements as a kid that reminded me of classic horror movies, mm-hmm, or fantasy movies and things like that. And I was more a fan of those things than just your straight out superhero story. So the fact that Doctor Strange in some of his initial incarnations and even into the 80s was drawn to look like Vincent Price was appealing to me. However, I was pretty much relegated to not finding the Doctor Strange I had grown up with, because Doctor Strange is so far out there and Marvel has kept such a tight rein on its universe all the way through the Thor, kind of bringing these characters in and diluting them a bit. But you know, I will say this, of the Marvel movies so far, I think Doctor Strange just might be, and it's probably slightly tied with Guardians of the Galaxy, just might be the most out there of the Marvel movies they've done so far.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, it's one of my favorites. It has a lot of flaws, I'm sure, mm-hmm, we'll talk about. Benedict Cumberbatch is good in the movie, but he's not the reason that I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not the story that I really like the movie. But this is, visually speaking,
mm-hmm,
this is by far the best looking of any of the Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
We can get into why that is in a minute, but I was really struck by the look of it. The
feel
of it, too, is very much Doctor Strange. It takes a while to get there and get that feel, but you do have this otherworldly sense, this kind of mystical sense of things. And the way that's threaded through the movie, there is a real feeling of reading an episode of a comic book, from something from the 60s or 70s particularly. The storyline's a little trite, but I did appreciate that there's at least a through line and an arc to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Civil War really seemed to be lacking that. I think if you remember when we talked, there was a question of, they didn't have a real handle on the agendas of all those characters.
Right.
I never felt like. Most of what I like about this movie is the atmosphere, the world building. The story basically still amounts to a bunch of good guys have to stop a bunch of bad guys from doing a horrible thing.
Right.
And you really feel the holes in that, I think, in this movie, because so much of what's going around it it seems like Doctor Strange wants you to be thinking about bigger things, mm-hmm. which isn't true of maybe all the other Marvel movies.
Sure.
There's something pushing at the seams here, which we can talk about, which I think goes a little bit beyond the typical good versus evil, responsibility sure. versus fecklessness sort of sure. thing that runs through most of the others. I have a few theories about why that is, but when you look at the story itself, there's not a whole lot there. But I did really enjoy it. I thought it was a fun time at the movies, and it did feel refreshing in the sense that my biggest complaint with the Marvel movies is they all look alike. Doctor right. Strange does not look like the rest of the Marvel movies.
No, it doesn't. And I think you're right, and I think there's an intentionality to that, because you really can't make a movie about... Harry Potter is a magical world that takes place in our world, which makes it fun and fantastical. This is a magical world that takes place across multiple dimensions. And I don't think there's anything spoiling in that. That's always been the world of Doctor Strange, him being able to move through dimensions and move in and out of...
Yeah, that's essentially kind of who his character is.
Right.
He's not a sorcerer we think of like a wizard that waves his hand and does a few tricks.
Right.
His abilities come from dimensions stacked up next to one another.
Exactly. And so with this, I think they had no choice, and in a good way, but to make this movie so different from what we've seen in the other movies, because there is more going on behind the scenes. To me, this is... I don't know what phase we're on in the Avengers world, 1, 2, 3,
I don't have that chart in front of me. I'm not done very well at keeping up with that.
But I feel like this is a good way to start in and work on a new phase in the Marvel universe, because this is something that is new and different and is opening our eyes to more of that universe and more of what we're seeing. And I really like that. I appreciated that in this movie. You know, initially when you're looking at the trailers, you're kind of thinking, okay, this looks like it's almost going to be another Inception movie. and it doesn't do that. It doesn't take that turn. It plays through some of those scenes that you're looking at in the trailers, and once they're brought to light in the movie, it really does a good job at explaining what's going on and why those things are happening.
Yeah, I think to a degree it does. It certainly, visually and spatially, there's a reason for the things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they fully go into the why. In fact, the mm-hmm. why is left open. A lot of the characters are just as frustrated as we are.
Yeah.
Cumberbatch is Strange is in a lot of ways just as frustrated about not knowing the purpose and the gist behind things. It's almost humorous that, you know, he keeps asking why or mm-hmm. what are we supposed to be doing here, and it doesn't quite seem that the plot's ready to reveal that, because the plot doesn't know where it's going. So I guess to back up a little bit, we could just lay this out in a way that's non-spoilery, because I suspect that even though some people are aware there's Doctor Strange movie, it's coming out. If you've had an inclination to see it, by the point you're hearing this, you may have already seen it.
Yeah.
And we do have we'll announce when we get to the point where we'll introduce spoilers, mm-hmm. and we can talk a little bit more about specifics. But I think there will be a contingent of people out here who see the trailer who really don't know who mm-hmm. Doctor Strange is or what's going on in this movie. And I don't want to belabor that, but probably just to set it up, I would say that you start with this story of a man who's a neurosurgeon, a very mm-hmm. gifted neurosurgeon, and much like many of the other Marvel characters, he is very confident in his own abilities and his mm-hmm. own power over death, really.
Yeah.
We see him in the operating room. His eyes aren't blind to suffering the way Tony Stark's are. At least that's
correct.
The way it seems. He's willing to rush in and save somebody and do whatever it takes to prevent someone from dying. But we do realize that callousness is basically happening because his reasons for doing what he does are not out of some great sense of charity, but for his own gain, for his own ego,
yes.
and for his own mastery over death. He starts to explore some of these things internally as the movie goes along, but he's no really less vain than somebody like Tony Stark. However, he probably is more aware of where that vanity comes from. Tony Stark has an element where he's just not paying attention at the
right.
beginning of Iron Man.
Right.
And Stephen Strange seems to be well aware of that and doesn't care. And he does reach a point very early in the movie where there's a traumatic accident that, and this isn't really too much of a spoiler because it is the very basis of the character.
Yeah.
He is in an accident that takes away his ability to be a neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
And that sends him on this journey that ultimately brings him to a group that has ties to like Eastern mysticism. Yes. I think it's safe to say that that's, but what it really means in the terms of the Marvel Universe is this is a group of characters that are working, interacting with, and protecting the astral dimension, another sort of dimension of reality that we could probably safely say represents a spiritual dimension.
Yes.
In fact, there are characters who reference kind of blatantly and openly that, well, the Avengers, they're right. the people that protect this physical material world, right. but we're the guardians of the spiritual world. We're fighting threats no less dangerous on a much larger level. And of course, this does add an element of a secret battle going on, the hidden world, that while we walk through life, there is a spiritual struggle occurring that is no less real, and they find different ways to visualize this through the movie. And of course, Strange initially begins this journey to restore his surgeon abilities.
Yes.
But as the film continues, we really see him starting to interact and become more aware of this battle, what the stakes are, and where he plays a part. Mm-hmm. So I think that's safe to say that's your basic gist. Is there anything you would add to that, Nathan, in terms of setting up the story?
I don't think so. I think you're right. I think that does a great job at, you know, introducing who Doctor Strange is, why he makes this journey into this realm, this world. You know, he's ultimately looking for healing. What I find kind of interesting is, you know, he's brought so low to a point where he's willing to explore any option. He's a man of science, you know. As a neurosurgeon, he is portrayed as that staunch, if I can see it, if I can touch it, if I can feel it, that's what's real. And he's brought so low that he's willing to go and explore the possibility that, all right, maybe there is something mentally going on that I need to work on, something that is within me that's broken, that needs to be fixed. Not with open arms, though, which I think is great. You know, this struggle we see with him over this science versus spirituality is something that is a theme throughout the entire movie.
Yes, I would say there's some nuances to that that are different than like a movie like Iron Man, where you have with Iron Man, you know, Tony Stark, he kind of learns his lesson,
yes.
and he goes back and he spends a lot of the movie trying to figure this out. You're right, this happens over the course of the movie, but at the same time, he doesn't keep having the same struggles like back and forth like a tug of war through the entire movie. He embraces pieces of this and then moves to the next step and to the next step because he's a man who wants to learn more.
Right.
And I think I'd like to talk about in a few minutes, but we can still kind of discuss the basic. I'd like to talk about the movie as a movie and then about some of the themes. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is when you have that moment in any of these movies, whether we're talking about the Nolan Batman movies or we're talking about the Marvel movies, that when the character first encounters that element of grandness that's bigger than they are, they have that choice to reject it or embrace it, or maybe the movie's about their struggle to embrace it. And there's that moment when he encounters the Ancient One, played by Tilda Swinton, who gives him a very brief and very trippy like taste of what this other dimension looks like.
Yes.
And I appreciate that two things happen here. The Marvel Universe here, director Scott Derrickson does take the time to give you this really trippy, weird jaunt that could go on for some people almost too long, you know? But it gives you an idea what this astral dimension looks like. One of the big disappointments for me in a movie like Ant-Man, when we talked about Ant-Man, at one point shrinks down and goes into this like microverse. Like, you don't get a really good look at it. Anytime these characters go into another dimension, this is true of a lot of the Marvel movies, you never get a really good peek. When that portal opens up in the Avengers, you're not really certain what's beyond it, except some vastness of space.
Yes.
So taking the time to show this Doctor Strange astral universe was kind of cool. So it it gives you something you've never really seen before in the Marvel world.
Yes.
And then when he comes back, the minute he comes back, this is now the point where Cumberbatch, as the actor playing Strange, has to embody how he's going to respond to this. As you've said, he's been established as a man of reason and of science who wants a scientific answer. He's just spent a few minutes mocking, well, that looks like something I'd see in a gift shop on a postcard. Right. Like, he is not ready to accept any of this. And as soon as he comes back, his response to this is not a big speech. He just says, teach me.
Yes.
He's not instantly converted, but he's ready to learn. He wants to know. His mind is open. I think that's that's an interesting idea there, and I think there's some stuff going on underneath of it mm-hmm. as we look at the filmmakers and we look at what's going on with the movie. But it's interesting because you're almost like that to kind of make a, I guess, spiritual connection. You have that kind of Apostle Paul thing going yes. on where he's knocked off his horse
yeah.
and his getting back up is not instantly, when the minute he stands back up, even though you can maybe interpret that, he's not the Apostle Paul who is seen later in Scripture
right.
telling people all these great things and being this herald. That's not who he is when he stands up. But when he stands up, his response is one that puts him on the road to being that person. And that's kind of what you're seeing here. He says, teach me.
Yes.
I thought that was an interesting way to get the character started on a road so we didn't have all this time spent with him huffing and puffing about how he can't imagine, he can't embrace this
right.
world. He's ready. He becomes an avid student of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. And what's fascinating is some of the responses of the characters who are showing him this. Because what's interesting is the Ancient One is hesitant to teach him. You know, there's that reluctancy, even though she's just opened his eyes to this, and he says, teach me, she essentially says, no, I'm not going to. And you're left with this moment of, what's going to happen? You know, what? How
well, we know you're going to teach him because he has to
right.
be Doctor Strange.
Right.
But, and I think that is kind of a typical sort of element that you see in these movies where the teacher is reluctant mm-hmm. with a student. And, of course, in this movie, like a lot of others, the reluctance comes because of a previous student.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is the Star Wars
yes.
thing. I don't know if we teach you because, man, your
right.
dad was a bad egg.
Yeah, Kung
but
Fu
we
Panda.
Kung Fu, yeah, that's the movie I was referencing. Kung Fu Panda. Nothing to do with Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. But you're right. And that Kung Fu Panda, which was referencing a whole host of martial arts films
right.
in that kind of Middle Eastern context, it does come across that element of the knowledge is sacred, the knowledge is important,
right.
the job is important, but we aren't entirely certain what you're going to do with it.
Yes.
So, yeah, that comes into play. The world building in the movie I thought was really good. And I think that's what some of the Marvel movies initially do well, is building a world that can conceivably hold an Iron Man or a Captain mm-hmm. America. But when you get into a different, literally a different dimension, when you're trying to handle characters like Thor
yes.
or Doctor Strange, because they exist in a world that is so much larger and
yes.
the scope is so big that, you know, it really tends to make the real world look kind of like so small, and who
yes.
cares, and are there any stakes here really that we can gravitate towards and understand? And when Strange starts out with such a small kind of petty desire, and you know he wants to get his hands fixed
right.
when you kind of contrast that against these cosmic battles that are going
right.
on in these dark dimensions that want to force their way into our world and things like that, the story takes on a different scope, and you have
yeah.
to have the ability, both with your actors and your writers and your directors, to be able to bridge that gap without losing the audience
yeah.
in the process. And I think they did a relatively good job of that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And one of the things that I've always disliked about the buildup of the story of some of the other Marvel movies is starting with Iron Man 3. So after the Avengers come together, you know, you can conceivably before that picture the Avengers being off doing their own thing. You have this huge Earth crisis where the Avengers are coming together. Well, then you have this issue going on where in Iron Man 3, okay, people are now aware of Tony Stark. The Avengers have somewhat been formed. He's dealing with this crisis of this villain that he has, the Mandarin, and he's the only one dealing with it. You don't have Captain America flying over to help him. It's like, okay, they're just kind of lost because we need to set up another individual story. Where in Doctor Strange, you can see why none of the other Avengers are around. They can't be around because none of them, as far as we know, are really aware of what's going on in these extra-dimensional worlds. They've had a taste of it with the Chitauri and what went on in the first Avengers movie, but they still don't know how to really access those worlds. As far as we know, Thor took the Tesseract off world. Any other trans-dimensional way to move about, as far as we know, is non-existent. And so being able to set up this movie and not question, okay, where are the other Avengers? Where are the other heroes? I think is so plausible. And I enjoyed that about this movie. I wasn't sitting there going, where is so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? They're not around because they're not aware of what's going on.
No, that's a good point. And I think that's one of the things I did like about the movie, regardless of, I know what you're saying about the plausibility, is like, okay, there's a good reason that they're not involved here. For one thing, they're all fighting each other.
Right.
But at this point, they're all squabbling amongst themselves or locked up somewhere or in hiding. But what I appreciate about not spending much time on that Marvel universe, that building of the Marvel universe, is you do get what I said, where you don't have that fatigue of just watching them set up something over and over again. And there's very little, I would say. One thing I've never had a problem with is them setting up the movies through those, like, scenes at the end of the movie.
Yes.
Those, like, credit sequences.
Yes.
I'm okay with setting up your universe through the credit sequences. But when it starts to bleed into the actual film, and it starts to ruin the momentum of the actual movie, which Marvel movies already have a problem with momentum. This one's actually no exception to that. But when you start to run the momentum down by wasting time, mm-hmm. by throwing in a character here that's going to pay off three movies from now, Doctor Strange really didn't do that.
Right.
You only have a handful of references, really.
Right.
I caught a couple. There were some very, very... there were ones that were so suggestive that they may not have even been references, but I just tuned into the fact that they might be.
Sure.
One of them being a point when Doctor Strange is running through who are the patients that you guys have, and he's mm-hmm. mentioning, well, I've got this girl who has a chip in her brain that blocks, and I was like, I don't know who that is,
right.
but it sounds like it could be a superhero,
right.
and he mentions that there's a general who had some kind of bionic armor on, and I'm like, I'm sure those are all perhaps comic references, but they're
sure.
kind of subtle enough
yeah.
that they don't draw immediate attention to themselves.
Yeah.
The same is true later. You know, there's one or two. There's that one reference I mentioned to the Avengers,
right.
but that's basically it. I did like that when he is in New York, you do see the Avengers
yes.
Tower.
Yes.
That does make sense. We're in the same universe. You should be able to see Avengers Tower.
Yes.
But they don't talk about Avengers
right.
Tower or get into
discussions.
It's
there.
About
it. It's part of the world, and it exists naturally in the world. There's nothing.
Yes. There's one Infinity Stone reference, but
right.
I feel like that's okay. It
right.
doesn't, you know, it doesn't draw a lot away from the story. What did you think about the cast on this? Let's talk about that. The actors,
yeah.
how they were utilized, how they did, what they brought or detracted from the movie.
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with Benedict Cumberbatch. I mean, to me, he's a fantastic actor. I think he did a great job at bringing Doctor Strange to life. This is the Doctor Strange that I have grown up with, I feel like, in terms of character and personality. The one thing, you know, that I said earlier, I didn't quite feel like he was jerky enough, arrogant enough, but I think that's okay because this is probably one of the longer first installments that we've
seen.
Yeah,
it's about 2 hours and 10 minutes long,
yeah.
I think. And it's... it felt longer because there were about 30 minutes worth of previews
yes.
before our
yeah.
Showing. But
I think because of that, like, I could excuse some of that. I mean, he's definitely set up as being an arrogant man of science. But not so much that you don't dislike his... I mean, you do very much. You can sympathize and relate to that character. He's not a Tony Stark where you're like, I just want to walk up and punch you in the face.
Yeah, and that was part of that I thought worked okay in the first movie where you're supposed to see him change. I think it's worked less when they have sat on that like a crutch and kind of just relied upon Downey Jr.'s ability to make that kind of snarkiness seem appealing.
Yes.
But I think it has its limits, and I think those limitations are where he's become Snark Man and not
yes.
and he's Tony Snark. And
yeah.
So that's all that seems to be there for him these days. I mean, it's a very generic sort of... transformation in Doctor
yeah.
Strange. I think it's handled relatively well,
mm-hmm.
but there are no surprises or really nuances
no.
to
and
that.
There's
I
no,
think.
I would say there's no dramatic conversion in who he is. I think there are subtleties in him shifting, as you talked about earlier, where the reasons for him doing what he was doing was all within himself. His reasons for doing what he's doing has now changed, but he's still a confident, capable man. able to do his job.
Yeah. I do appreciate that element, which is really you're looking at more like the burning away of the dross, if you will, where this isn't one person becoming a whole new person.
Yes.
This is a person sort of taking the inventory of who they are and sifting through the darker elements or the more shallow elements and the fearful elements and trying to find and trying to bring to the surface those things that make him strong.
Yeah.
And I think that that's more interesting. And I think that there's a good handle on that in this story. I think it tells it in a relatively plausible way that doesn't just rely upon cliches. So this is probably going to be a somewhat unpopular opinion, but I thought Benedict Cumberbatch was okay. I think he's an excellent actor. I think he did a good job with the character. I think that one of the issues, though, is Benedict Cumberbatch feels like he might have been a very good Doctor Strange in, say, Christopher Nolan's Doctor Strange. And that's not me saying Christopher Nolan should have been the person to direct Doctor Strange. I'm basically just making that comparison that in the Nolan Batman world, that was a much more grounded, more realistic sort of world, a Doctor Strange where you're really trying to explore that man of science with the sorcerer aspects of it, that you could have explored it in a more, I don't want to say realistic way, but in a more psychological, character-driven way, Cumberbatch could have probably really latched on that and given you something great. He does well in this movie. He handles the kind of... He's light enough a little bit to handle the humor, but then he also grounds him and makes him seem like a plausible character. He's a dude running around in a big, like, fancy red cape.
Right.
So he gets all that, and I like him in the movie. This is probably more me than anything, but I feel like Doctor Strange, he is such a sort of eccentric kind of character. He's been an eccentric character in the comics that I kind of wanted him, I wanted to see a little bit more like outsized flair or or quirkiness to his character, to kind of who he is. This is a guy who is exploring the astral dimension, and you expect it to take a little bit of a toll on him.
Right.
And yet Cumberbatch kind of is just, he's always holding it together. He does a good job, but I'm wondering if, you know, in an effort to get this good actor, and we've got to get a guy on screen that we can follow, and he's going to instantly sort of take this character that people are a little iffy on and just instantly ground him, which he totally does.
Sure.
I'm probably still smarting from the fact that 15, 20 years ago, they didn't take the opportunity when Jeffrey Rush was a little younger to have him be Doctor Strange, because that I could get behind that. And I can get behind this. He does a good job, but I think, like, to me, Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One, Chiwetel Ejiofor as Mordo, those characters are a little more intrinsically interesting. Just in the terms of this movie, they're more compelling to me than Doctor Strange, than Stephen Strange. Mostly because he is a privileged white guy who has a few problems and is learning to be less of a jerk. Like, we see that a lot. Swinton gets introduced early in the movie in a big action scene where you start to get the stakes and the weird dimensions of this world. And you're instantly interested in who she is, how she's come to be in this place where she's fighting these fights that she's involved in. And that opening scene sets it up that I'm ready to follow that character. I want to see the Ancient One, her movie. You know, I want this story to be her story.
Right.
And she is kind of relegated aside. Swinton's really good in this movie. I'd say she does take that weird eccentricity and oddness and elevate it to another level. And it's not... Cumberbatch can do that. He was just doing the job he was hired to do, which is to make Strange a kind of walk-down-the-line hero character. Right.
Well, the thing with Strange, though, and that I will say, is we never get a full resolution. He never fully embodies his character, his hero character. He's still at the end of the movie, kind of still doubting and questioning. He's still learning, I guess.
And I get that. I guess my issue, and this probably gets into the pacing thing, after 2 hours and 10 minutes, I want to see him be more the Sorcerer Supreme. Maybe start at a different place in the story. A good example, I think we were talking about the pacing, is, you know, it take in Batman Begins, after about 5 or 10 minutes, you know, Bruce Wayne is there heading towards that temple, and he's getting involved in the story. Whereas in Doctor Strange, it takes us close to about 45 minutes or so. Maybe that might be a slight exaggeration, but not by much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good...
I was going to say at least a half hour.
Yeah, it's somewhere between 30 minutes and 45 minutes before he is involved in the meat of this story.
Yeah.
And that's not to say those 40 minutes are per se boring,
right,
but they definitely, some of them do feel unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And so, I see what you're saying, but that's another element of this whole franchise, the idea that we have to really wait to get to the good stuff. Right. I've got to watch 2 hours and in 2 hours and 10 minutes, I can read most of the good Doctor Strange stories by sitting here on my couch and have a really good picture of who this character is.
Right.
After 2 hours and 10 minutes, I'm still not at the point where I have the character that I want.
Sure.
Chiwetel Ejiofor was really good
as
Mordo. To a degree, one of my problems with the Mordo character is, and we can talk about this when we get to spoilers, which will probably be shortly, is Mordo has a trajectory in the comics that you can't really ignore. You're either going to ignore it, you're either going to change that game, or you're going to follow it, and if you know anything about it, then you know something has to happen here.
Yes.
So, Ejiofor is playing with a character that all of his elements haven't been tacked down yet. We're not really supposed to know exactly who he is because he's not sure. He's kind of feeling it out. And I didn't quite buy that whole transition. We'll get to that.
But
I think he showed some great, like... Yeah, he's a great actor anyway, but he showed some real grounding to the character and some real resolve early on that sort of started to fluctuate. He sort of ended up playing his same character from... A toned down character on the different side of things, but some of his rigidness reminded me of the Serenity character, reminded me of the character from Children of Men and stuff like that. Where Ejiofor tends to play those characters well, men who are abiding by a strict code and they don't know what to do once their code falls away. But he had enough gravitas. I could have followed him as a major character. Honestly, had he been Doctor Strange, I might have enjoyed the movie just as much. Granted, that would have been a very different Doctor Strange. But I sat there and thought about that and said, I can picture a movie where I'm watching Ejiofor as Doctor Strange and still get into this movie. Rachel McAdams, I'm going to probably go, which is, this is a seems to be a popular opinion in the terms of the movie right now, which is that she's pretty much wasted.
Yeah.
I don't mean wasted in a drunk way. I mean, she is like,
they wasted the character.
In a world where I think Gwyneth Paltrow is Pepper Potts and Natalie Portman is Jane, those characters have been wasted and given second shrift. Even when they become super powered, that's when they just dispose of them all together. You're out.
Right.
We'll reference you once in a while. And those that doesn't get any better with Doctor Strange. Rachel McAdams is literally just there when he comes running and needs help. She's just a plot device and not a very good plot device. It's not that her acting is bad.
Right.
It's just that she is given almost embarrassingly little to do in the movie. I think that, like, if I'm someone who's coming to these movies and I'm like, okay, where's your female interest element here? I mean, they're basically hoping that people are going to enjoy the few scenes where Cumberbatch has his shirt off. I mean, like, there's not... And the romance element is not very high in this movie. I'm not arguing that that needs to be there, but it's almost like they want that. They want that love interest, but they don't want to give the depth of character to her, or they don't know how to write the depth of character. She's just terribly wasted to the point that you don't get a feeling that you might even ever see her again because she doesn't seem important to this story.
Right. Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think I think in all fairness, though, there is something going on in the Marvel Universe. First of all, when you go into the comics and you know, say this quick word and then we'll start diving into the spoilers. But when you get into the comics, first of all, these characters have all had multiple love interests. And so there's no getting away from that. So one thing that I do appreciate is Marvel at least trying to pick one main one and ground that one within the storyline. And from there, you know, because again, we talked about the flow and the pace of the movie. Where Doctor Strange is floating in and out of dimensions, there's really no time to settle on finding Rachel McAdams and figuring out what went on there, except for if you were going to do like a flashback or something like that, that would explore their relationship more. And you would find out what they actually meant to each other at one point.
I get that. I think that makes sense in terms of the comics. But I guess what I'm saying is if you're going to... You're going to hire Rachel McAdams. You're going to write this character into the story. Mm-hmm. Then you really do need to find something interesting for her to do. Either take the love interest angle out and just reference it, flashbacks, or make it a smaller part of the story, and cast McAdams as somebody else. You know, I'm sure there's somebody out there, some character that, heck, I mean, the 70s movie brought in Morgana Le Fay as a major villain. I'm not saying do that. But what I'm saying is to bring in a female character like that and just... use her in the way that is just most predictable and isn't satisfying anyway. It's wasted screen time. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of an actor's talent. And it brings the movie down a notch because I feel like it's doing a lot of other things well. Now, this seems like I'm ignoring the fact Tilda Swinton is cast in a major role that was previously a male role and previously an Asian man.
Right.
But I'm just, it's nice that Swinton's there and she's got this big role and she is an integral part of the story. But even she does play second fiddle to Strange. Mm-hmm. And I'm not arguing this needs to be a female empowerment story, just that the Rachel McAdams character, they either should have cut her or they should have made her more integral to the story.
Yeah.
I think the last thing I want to say, also, I guess casting-wise, we should also talk a little bit. Mads Mikkelsen is the villain.
Yep.
He's another great actor, a fantastic actor, has a lot more range than I think people are aware. Mm-hmm. Most people may know him from Hannibal. I'd recommend, if you don't know him, there's a Danish movie called The Hunt, which sounds, because Mikkelsen is sort of this big, burly-looking dude, that you're going to get some kind of Viking story. He's been in a couple of Viking movies. But no, this is a movie about a man who is accused of child abuse and who is innocent, and that's the stakes are right up front, and it's about how he and the town interact with one another. Mm-hmm. And he's playing a very vulnerable character. He's great. In this movie, he is another villain whose dimensions aren't explored very much. Mm-hmm. And he's just sort of a throwaway. He's not as bad as like the later Thor movies where character actors like Christopher Eccleston are saddled with all this makeup.
Right.
And you can't even get a sense of who they are underneath. It's, or the same thing with Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not that bad, but it isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. He didn't strike any interest to
me. Yeah, no, and I agree. And I think at that point it's just a question of what you're going to do to tell this story. You know, what are fans looking for in an origin story? You know, and you've got to strike a balance between, do we stay faithful to the comics? Do we change things up a little bit? If we're going to change things up, how much do we change things up? And there's just this balance to strike. And I have this debate with a friend of mine who I'm hoping we're going to have on here at some point, Dave Middleton, all the time about, the purity of the comics versus what do you do to rewrite a story that's going to involve new watchers. Someone like Joy has loved the Marvel series that has come out because she's not very familiar with it. There are things that I've loved about it. There are things that I've hated about it. But overall, I think it's a good... I feel like when I put all the movies together and over the course of a long weekend, if I were to watch from beginning to end, I feel like, all right, I'm getting a comic book story that I can appreciate that will take my imagination somewhere. And I feel like this one did that with Doctor Strange. And I like that, and I appreciated that within that. I hope they do explore some of these things a little more in movies to come. But I felt like for an origin story, like you said, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was one of the better ones that we have.
Last thing before we go to spoilers, because I think people who are listening to this who don't want it to be spoiled, who haven't seen it yet, might be asking, which is, let's talk about action scenes and set pieces and the whole overall dynamic. Because these comic book stories are supposed to be thrilling. They're supposed to be full of adventure and special effects and things like that. And that just comes with the territory.
Yeah.
What did you think about that element of the movie, the visual element and the action element?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, you and I were talking about going into it how, oh, you know what, we did not see it in 3D. We did not see it in IMAX. We just saw it on, plain old screen. To me, I think if I were to have seen this movie in 3D, it might have got a little dizzying and distracting. It was very well done. There were so many things going on in the crossover of dimensions. There's the spell that they do to protect the dimension where, essentially everything is caving in this protection that they're in, but the outside dimension is kept whole and pure and nothing's going on to it. Nothing's destroyed in it. And so there's a lot of craziness that's going on in there. To me, I felt like if I were to have been in those scenes in the 3D, it really would have taken me on a more psychedelic ride. And so that might have been more fun, but I think it would have distracted from the other elements of action that were going on in those scenes. But overall, visually, I thought it was very well done. I was very intrigued by it. And I think for me, not seeing it in 3D allowed me to appreciate more of what was going on in those scenes than if I had seen it in 3D. What about you?
I thought that action-wise, that this is hands down action and visual intrigue that this was the best of the Marvel movies so far, because there's this, what's happening on screen is always compelling. There are a lot of elements to it. There's a lot of literal moving pieces when these things start going on. And there's an element of this where you're looking at something that is a little bit abstract. We're not exactly sure what is motivating all of these things. And it is taking reality and bending it a little. So there is a sense of awe and wonder to it. We're not just watching a character jump 50 feet in the air. We've seen them do this in Marvel movies time and time again. Even Doctor Strange's flying cloak has a life of its own.
Yes.
And it becomes its own character and it does little things here and there. That's kind of compelling. It reminds me, there's a lot of things they do in this movie that they tried to do in a movie many years ago called Spawn, which was a comic book character.
Yep,
and it was a terrible movie.
Yes.
It was special effects overload. They had a lot of great ideas, a lot of neat things they wanted to do. One of them being that Spawn's cloak could come to life, but they didn't know how to handle it.
Yes.
We're further along visually. We're further along knowing how to use these elements to tell stories. And Doctor Strange does that. The Marvel movies for me have been so content to just all look the same, all feel the same, and not venture out into something new. We're always watching guys just fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
We watch guys fight each other here in this movie, but we do it with some interesting backdrops.
Yes.
There's a interesting kind of fun scene in a hospital where things are happening that we can talk about. There's that big scene in something called the Mirror World that is kind of fascinating in the middle. And I'm the opposite of you. I've never said this coming in a movie. I actually wanted to see this in 3D. Because I did want to be overwhelmed in that way. I kind of want to be lost in this weirdness. You talked about Inception. I'm going to say this. This is not, Doctor Strange is not a better movie than Inception. But Inception gave me these little peaks when they were bending the brownstones and moving the buildings and seeing the trains come out, materialize out of nowhere. They were little peaks that piqued my interest and I want to see more of that. Doctor Strange goes full tilt into that. You're just watching this elaborate and amazing thing unfold before your eyes. And it remains pretty interesting to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't do the same effect over and over. We see the mirror world. We see this really neat playing with time and space at the very end.
Yes.
The last battle scene is compelling to me for the way they handle
it.
And I'm going to, this is the Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy is the other one, that I will go back and I'll watch again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to watching it on a projector here. And I did take my son to see it, who probably understood 2% of what was happening in this movie. But some of it was so neatly explained visually.
Yes.
There's a scene where we see an apple basically eat itself down to the core and then replenish itself.
Yes.
And it happens a couple times, and he could grasp that visually.
Yes.
That's an interesting, thought-provoking concept with no dialogue and no explanation. And that happens a few times in this movie.
Yes.
This movie has moments where you could watch it and just enjoy it as a beautiful piece of art. I mean, really, I don't think the overall experience of the movie is art.
Right.
But there's a lot of imagination going into this movie that I don't think went into some of the others.
And I would agree with that. You said, I remember one of the comments you said back when we did Captain America Civil War is, you could picture that movie. There were scenes in there that you could look at and picture as being comic book scenes that made that movie very appealing. You know, that you could see that page, and you're reading that page as it's playing out in the screen. And I felt like this had some of those same appeals, you know, that you could see, hey, you know what, I can actually picture that as I'm reading my comic book, this scene happening in
the comics. I think where Captain America Civil War, to me, was sort of a kind of overblown melodrama with moments of that in there where, okay, now I'm at the comic book part.
Right.
Now I'm at the comic book part. Doctor Strange is more that movie overall.
Yes.
Like, I think it is, a lot of it is like watching a comic book. Or I think this is one of the few movies that taps into that thing that we find appealing in video games that they never seem to translate to screen. It looks like they're about to mess it up again with Assassin's Creed. But there are some scenes where they're starting to get into the aesthetic of video games and melding it with cinema in a way that I thought worked in this movie. Like,
hey,
that's almost, they've almost found a way to bridge that appeal of what goes on in a video game universe where logic and physics have been thrown out the window.
Yes.
And you've got a lot of characters coming out of different areas at one time. They almost got there in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So they almost bridged that pretty well. So if you're going to do a rating, let's do a rating. If we're going to do the out of 5 stars rating, what would you give this movie?
I would give it a solid 4.5.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
I'm a harder grader. I would say, for me, this is a 3.5 overall. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's a good rating. I'd say for me, 3 is when I start recommending a movie. 3 is like, okay, this is good. 5 stars is like masterpiece. But, you know, when you look at the visual elements, if you're someone who loves Marvel movies, if you're on the Marvel scale, I could bump that up a 0.5 star to a 4 in the realm of the Marvel movies.
Right.
So to me, if something like Captain America Civil War was more of a 2.5, where it's like, there's a lot of things I liked about it. I didn't quite, it's almost recommendable. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. You know, it's a 2.5, 3. This is about a full star higher, full star higher than that. So sure. I'd say 3.5. I could be persuaded 4 if you're moving that to the Marvel scale of things.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, I think you're right. You know, for me, I'm a fan of it. I love the Marvel stuff that they're doing. To me, it's getting, the one thing I will say about Marvel is I don't feel like it's getting worse and worse. I think as they're introducing characters. Now, the individual sequels that they're doing within movies, I think, are getting worse and worse. I think Iron Man 2 was worse than Iron Man 1. Iron Man 3 was worse than Iron Man 2. But I will say, I think they're getting better at telling stories as they're moving along and moving up the ladder.
I think what we're seeing with some of these characters that are a little bit more, and I'm hoping that this plays out, we've had Marvel hiring interesting directors to do these mm-hmm. movies, but then kind of hamstringing them so they can't deliver the movie mm-hmm. they really want to deliver. I feel like here Scott Derrickson's a guy who's done some movies, a couple of movies that, horror movies really, Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, he did years ago like a Hellraiser movie and things like that. And Day the Earth Stood Still remake, which not less said about that the better. And he did a movie called Deliver Us from Evil. But those movies, I'm not quite sure how they arrived and said, Scott Derrickson's the guy to do Doctor Strange, but he did a great job. And he delivered a movie, for me anyway, looking at his other work, I wouldn't have necessarily said, okay, this is what's going to come from hiring that guy.
Yes.
Same is true of James Gunn. When you look at the movies James Gunn had done, like yes. Troma movies and Slither and Super, like, I don't see how they could have said, okay, we see this laid on the Guardians of the Galaxy. But it worked. They gave this guy enough latitude that yes. they could do something a little different. Meanwhile, you hire Kenneth Branagh to do Thor, and you don't get the Thor you want to see from Kenneth Branagh. I'm not necessarily saying, say, Thor is a bad movie,
right.
but it's not the movie that the guy who did a 4-hour version of Hamlet...
Right.
You know, you're expecting something a little different. And I'm hoping as we go forward, as we see some interesting people that they've hired for these future movies, that they start to give them a little more latitude.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
Yeah.
You ready to hit the spoilers?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and let's dive right in. So for those of you who are, you know, not wanting to hear the spoilers, you haven't seen the movie yet, haven't been paying attention to a lot of it, now's the time to shut off. With that said, I want to talk about the biggest, what I think is the biggest one out there, and that is at the end of the movie, we still don't have a Sorcerer Supreme.
That's right. The Ancient One, so again, we're in spoiler territory now. Ancient One dies.
Yep.
Is that in keeping with the comics? I don't remember.
Yes.
I thought that...
Yes,
you know,
the Ancient One dies, and that's how the mantle is passed
seems
on.
Seems like Ancient One kept showing up sometimes, but maybe that's just because of the time and space anomaly.
Like,
he can kind of appear.
Yeah, it's like almost, you know, like
Force Ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm cool with, because I would love to see Tilda Swinton again. It's funny, because
right.
we were talking about, it's like, I want a movie that follows Tilda Swinton, right. and Joy, your wife, was like, well, you know what? We'll probably get the origin
yes.
story, where they delve into that, and they throw a little bit out there. She's Celtic, we know that, so you're
yes.
right. They could do a whole movie, but we probably won't get Tilda Swinton. It'll be like Jennifer Lawrence with a
yes.
bald head, if she's not making another Mystique movie. So... I agree that, yeah, it's left open. There's not a Sorcerer Supreme yet. Like, Doctor Strange is installed at the New York Gate
mm-hmm.
Temple or whatever, but that's where he is. He's not the Sorcerer Supreme. He said,
yeah.
well, what are we going to do without a Sorcerer Supreme? Well, we'll get by. And then he just walks on by
yes.
like, well, you could have volunteered,
yeah.
but you didn't. So you're right. That's left open, although I'm not that surprised by that because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're going to see Doctor Strange's story furthered in more movies before we get to another Doctor Strange movie.
Sure.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes Sorcerer Supreme either in the interim between these movies or somewhere else.
Yeah.
So before we talk about, because of course we're going to talk about those closing
yes.
those closing scenes, I do want to discuss just a few, anything you have. I've only got one thing. The two elements really I want to talk about in spoilers is the comedy in this movie is weird a little bit.
Yeah.
It's almost comedy that a lot of the other movies are so much pun related.
Yes.
That this movie takes a different tack. Most of the comedy is,
it's
this
physical.
Being a more visual movie,
yeah.
it's like physical stuff. My son laughed at most of the jokes because he understood them because they were just visually there in front of him. Like, but at the same time, it makes him a little cheesy. Like,
yes.
there's a scene when they open the door. He's been pleading outside for days. Just,
yeah.
who will let me in? And then they open the door and he falls in and you hear him go, thank you.
Right.
You know, or the scene where he's reaching through the portals and grabbing the books while Benedict Wong is listening to Beyonce. Like, that's stupid, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And you could see it happening in a comic book. Or the cape wiping his tears away in this like one scene. I will say there wasn't a lot of emotional emphasis, I think, in this movie. There were moments where I kind of felt it building, but it didn't ever reach, you know, death scenes are handled very, or big dramatic moments are handled kind of subdued.
Yeah.
When Tilda Swinton leaves the story, she does so in a very understated, muted kind of way. Mm-hmm. There isn't a big, tearful death scene. You don't even quite feel it that much.
Right.
For me, the big interesting thing that I'd like to talk, and one of the reasons for spoilers, is the end scene. The way they wrap this story up. And this is where I'm inclined to talk about what's going on under the story, because I thought this is a very interesting movie. Because I can see, we're Pop Culture Ninja, we've kind of spun off of These Go to 11, which is, of course, a Reformed and Christian podcast. And not to get into too many elements of that, but I think what's interesting is I would normally expect to see, there's a certain group of, I think, the Christian audience that would kind of be repelled by a movie like Doctor Strange. It's about mysticism. It's about Middle Eastern elements.
I've already seen the Facebook stuff.
Have you really seen? This is why I stay away from Facebook and these things. These ideas are you know, those are, that's talk for a different time. But what I think is interesting is the director, Scott Derrickson, has come forward at various points and talked about his faith as a Christian.
Yep.
And he's done many movies that have had the horror movies that, again, it's not something you'd normally see somebody with a Christian frame of reference addressing, but making these kinds of horror movies. And now making Doctor Strange, and he doesn't shy away from the mystical elements, but I think he presents them in an interesting way in the way he addresses the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Does seem to suggest that he's trying to draw from how he views the spiritual, which is to say, the way these characters interact with the spiritual is they completely ignore it, they embrace it, or they're mistrustful of it.
Sure.
But at some point they have to get beyond the simple element of, is this real or not?
Yeah.
This is not another movie about belief. This is about once you pass beyond belief and get to these are the stakes,
right?
What do you do with that knowledge?
Yes.
And it is not this screed like, oh, believe in this or believe in that.
Right.
This is about what's at the heart of these things. What is the heart of our fear of death? What is at the heart of our desire for self-control or controlling the things around us and controlling death? And I thought the way he dealt with that was interesting. And you get to the end scene, which is kind of this sort of brilliant moment where Strange confronts Dormammu, which is the big sort of villain, which again, he can't do better than a giant CGI head.
That's right.
But he gets in front of this thing and he's fighting it. And you get this concept of this eternal sacrifice that keeps happening looped. And this is a moment where I did wish that maybe the movie had moved from the silliness and embraced the dramatic, because it's almost a little comical to watch him get up there and get slaughtered again and again. But in the slaughtering, he is essentially addressing, I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to be eternal sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
That you will never be able to pass. You can't get beyond this. You know? And he continues to be... It's weird because it mimics in some ways what I thought was a completely ridiculous scene in the... And this is spoilers for another franchise, sorry, for the third Matrix movie, where ultimately the whole Matrix movie leads to Neo making a sort of deal with the AI. And then those religious overtones are so overblown and so ridiculous that I thought that here Derrickson handled it in a neat way. He gives this character who has been feckless, who's been very self-serving, and he takes those go-getting elements and even the egotism. Now he's got a full-blown martyr complex.
That's right.
Now he's just dying for everybody over and over and over again. And they kind of don't, you know, there isn't, it's not even made completely clear. I don't think he's completely sure why he's doing it. He's like, I'm going to go with it. You know, you don't have this big tearful moment where it's clear that he is doing this for the good of everybody.
Right.
He's still, I'm the savior. I'm going to die so everyone else can live. And, you know, and he handles it in a haughty way. He runs up and he just keeps taking him out again and again and again until finally he's like, okay, fine.
Right.
Let's cut a deal. But I liked that. I thought that was an interesting way to resolve the conflict. It was an interesting way to kind of bring up some of these parallels without making this a movie about, you know, like a that had some kind of deep message.
Yeah.
But it had some interesting things to think about, some interesting, compelling ideas, you know, that make somebody ask, even my son being, why is he dying over and over again? Why would he do that? Well, he's, you know, he's doing it in order to protect everybody else. And this idea of the sacrifice, Mordo keeps talking about that the bill will come due. Your actions, the bill will come due. I thought that they just handled that in an interesting way that gave the movie some depth without beating you over the head with something. Sure. You know, there's a lot there that just let the audience make of it what they will.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of just very interesting themes. You talk about they have this law, this code, that you're not to mess with the natural order of things. So you're not to mess with time. You're not to mess with death. You're not to mess with these things. And we find, and this is where I found it was interesting with Mordo's character. I think you're right. I think at the beginning of the movie, or throughout the movie, they could have handled Mordo a little better in showing just how much of a staunch rule follower he was. I don't really think they delved too much into the rules and into him following the rules, because I don't really think we know what the rules are. But
we
he's following them.
Strange asked several times, who are we exactly? Yeah. And they still don't tell him exactly. Right. Well, you know, they're supposed to fight this thing and so forth. We also don't know Mordo's backstory.
Yes.
And when we were talking before with Ian, he was kind of talking, giving me a little bit of background on Mordo, and that I think he had mentioned that Mordo had been a doctor too, like Strange. Mm-hmm. We don't know Mordo's backstory in this film. We also, because of that, we don't understand the psychology that has pushed him to want to follow all the rules.
Yes.
And I think that's the part that is a little bit his transition, which is where we can talk about this, his transition to villain, which we should know is coming if we know that he's Baron Mordo in the comic books, the bad guy, that his transition just doesn't quite resonate.
Yes.
It also sort of happens almost off screen.
Yes.
Because by the end of the second closing credit, we have Mordo saying he's out to kill sorcerers now and coming back and taking...
Or at the very least, steal their magic.
Steal their magic. That's true. He doesn't say kill. He says they need less sorcerers. He basically takes Benjamin Bratt's magic, leaves him a cripple again. So you're right. Kill, I'm adding that. That's not what happens. He's taking his power.
Yeah.
But it happens off screen, and it kind of reminds me of this is a much lesser movie, but the Green Lantern movie when it came out, when the Green Lantern introduces some of its characters, and there's a character in that movie that we know is essentially the villain, but isn't a villain at this point in the story, and he just sort of becomes a villain off screen. And it's another thing where I just didn't like following the rules, or I followed the rules too much, you know, this kind of thing where we just don't quite buy it. I didn't.
And I find that the danger with something like that is, you know, anything can happen between this movie and the next one that's going to come out. And you almost wonder if they're going to totally forget what happened in this scene that's gone on. And so they're not really going to explain this transition that's happened to him. And I think we've seen that a lot in these movies as well. As we get these scenes, as we get these pieces that come throughout this thread of movies, it almost seems like in between a first one and a second one, or a first one and a third one, or whatever it might be, there are pieces that just kind of, well, we threw them out here in this particular piece, but we're not really going to deal with anything major that's going to happen. One of the ones that I can think about is when we had Captain America Winter Soldier going into Avengers 2. And you had that one scene at the end where it was the making of the two twins, and you had, what was it, Baron Strucker, whoever it was.
Somebody.
With the, you know, and we didn't really get much on his story, and he's a prominent character in the comics. You got this one little scene at the end.
And
of
he's killed pretty early,
Winter
or
Soldier.
He's dispatched pretty early in, like, the second Avengers.
Exactly.
And I don't even, you know, that's one of the things, too, is, like, the end scene of Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, one of the many, I think there were a couple of, what do you call it, sequences, right? And, like, you know, there's Bucky and he's still around. And then eventually we get a scene later where now they've got Bucky and he's here and they need Ant-Man's help. You know, all these things are supposed to tie together, but they don't really.
Right.
To me. So let's talk about the scene that happened earlier, which was the first of the two credit sequences.
Yes.
Which is maybe more interesting to me only because I'm still trying to put together what is this tying together?
Yeah.
And it's getting us ready for the next is it the next Marvel movie? So Thor Ragnarok is essentially what this movie is setting up.
I believe so, yes.
And so when do we get that movie?
I think that's coming in... let me think. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of
the
Galaxy might be the next one because it's May. So it's going to be... So Guardians of the Galaxy 2, probably will be the next one we see, unless Thor is sooner. And I haven't seen a trailer for Thor Ragnarok yet. No,
I
haven't either.
I mean, I think I've seen a teaser where Bruce Banner is turning into the Hulk. He's rampaging through woods as the Hulk. But I haven't really seen a full-blown out trailer. What we know from Thor the Dark World is that Loki has taken over.
So that's going to be November, next November. Okay. So essentially this time next year will be when we get Thor Ragnarok. And that seems to be what's being set up in this,
yes,
in this scene. So what we know, and you might be able to fill this in because I haven't read, from the critic perspective, I've kind of stopped reading a lot of early buzz on things, just so when I step into the movie, there's a lot of things I didn't know about Doctor Strange because I simply had like avoided it. So I don't know, but feel free to speak to this if you know more. What's interesting about this final scene, they acknowledge two things. Loki is back in New York with Thor, though he's not on screen. Thor, correct. Apparently he's either not worried about Loki or he's been subdued somewhere because Thor's in here enjoying beer, refilling beer stein with Doctor Strange.
Yes.
And Strange is referencing that they've come to New York looking for Odin. Now, what's kind of ridiculous about this is this is now paying off a end credit scene from 2013 maybe?
Yeah,
from Thor the Dark World. So at the end of Thor the Dark World, after Loki has this kind of semi-poignant, though clearly staged, death scene.
Yes.
Then he goes back to
Asgard.
Asgard.
Yep.
At the very end of the movie when Thor is speaking to Odin, we realize that Odin is gone.
Yeah.
And that Loki is in his place. So correct. Loki's disposed of Odin.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, we think that's what's happened. And he's now sitting on the throne of Asgard. So we don't know what happened. While Thor was out taking care of the Dark Elves, Loki has put himself on the throne disguised as Odin. Now, and what's weird is that doesn't ever come back up through any of the other movies. So you have Avengers where Thor shows back up. Thor's having visions, but a lot of them seem related to the Infinity Stones and that storyline. And we don't ever get any... There's not even a mention made that, hey, Odin's been acting weird or anything like that. Literally, this thread has never been addressed again. We know it's going to be addressed in Ragnarok, but now you, just like that end scene of Ant-Man where, okay, they found Bucky. They've got him. Something's going on. And they says, will you help me? Yeah, I think I know a guy. Like, what's, you know, where in the storyline is this falling? And this is the same thing. So now Loki and Thor are together. Now, we don't know whether that's because Loki is his prisoner.
Correct.
Or if they are joined forces. And if they're joined forces, and hopefully Thor is not this dumb.
Right.
If they're joined forces, how does Thor know he could absolutely trust him at this point? But we're looking for my dad, which implies that Loki may not know where he is.
Or the other option is that Loki is still disguised as Odin. And the person that Doctor Strange refers to as Thor bringing Loki is actually Odin.
Well, except
portrayed
that Thor,
as Loki.
Oh, I see that. So, but you would. But if that's the case, he would probably tell him. I mean, that might be too complicated for. I mean, it seems to me that Loki and Thor are here now, and they're looking for Odin. And whether that's Loki got rid of him and didn't know what he did with him, or forgot, or what's going on, or if there's more to that. So it sets up a semi mystery of seems. Because you're trying to figure out why, if Thor has brought Loki there, perhaps as a prisoner, you're going to show me where Odin is. Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe Loki banished him to Earth, much like Thor was banished to Earth. And that's, you know what, given some of the stills and things that we've seen, where Anthony Hopkins dressed as a homeless man, so apparently I've read a little bit, bit, but I've tried to limit. That now starts to make a little bit of sense, and perhaps he is trapped and banished to Earth the same way Thor was banished to Earth.
Sure.
And perhaps Loki did that and doesn't remember. So I don't know. This is all speculation, which will probably come to fruition in Thor Ragnarok. But, I mean, as end credit scenes go, I guess it was fine. It basically lets us know that we're not just going to get Hulk. We're going to get Doctor Strange, but the question becomes, is Strange going to be a big player, or is he just going to be one small component of Ragnarok?
And I think that's going to be the bigger question, is Doctor... I mean, we clearly know that Hulk is going to, in some way, be a bigger part in Ragnarok, and from some of the things that I've read, again, who knows how much of this is true, because there's so many theories going around. There is speculation on also leading into Planet Hulk a little bit, and if there's going to be some involvement with that. What I found interesting in that scene was that I had never really thought of before, because I didn't really think it was brought out in the comics so much, is Doctor Strange seems to be the overseer and overprotector of all the dimensions. Similar to the way that Asgard views itself as a protector and guardian of all the dimensions, Doctor Strange seems to be able to look into, and he's been keeping an eye on things, which I don't ever remember that really being the case with Doctor Strange. So that aspect of that intrigued me much more than the whole Thor-Loki thing, was Doctor Strange's role in the dimensions.
That's very true. And in that clip, he's clearly sort of embraced this element of, hey, I know that you've come through here. Although we could say that that's more, he's a caretaker of Earth. And so he's, you know, they've come forward. He's become aware that he's on this planet. So, but yeah, I think that's interesting. I am more interested now that we have some of the supernatural characters involved. So,
yep. No, you know, this, again, you know, let's just kind of finishing it out. You know, this is a movie. I think, you know, you and I said we would recommend it. This is one that you said, 3D, you would be more willing to go see it.
I'd say if you haven't seen 3D and you are someone who kind of gravitates toward that, I'd say take the chance, because I didn't see it in 3D, but I can see how it would be a very interesting experience. Yeah. I mean, it would be, you're right, it could be overwhelming, but to me, that's like, I want to be overwhelmed, I'm going to pay $2 extra or something like that for the technology. And you mentioned it distracting from some of the other elements. To me, this movie's primary benefit is the visual element. That's its strength. This movie can be viewed, people who are going to, who enjoy kind of crazy visuals, are going to find more to like in this movie than some of the others. Mm-hmm. They might be surprised that, hey, I really liked some of the sights and some of the things I saw in this movie. That's my primary reason for recommending it, is it's going to be a good visual experience.
Sure.
And you stay through the credits, not just for those credit scenes, but for that really cool Doctor Strange, what is it, the Master of the Mystic credit sequence or something that Michael Giacchino. I will say this. This is a first score in a Marvel movie that I actually feel I'm going to go out and buy and listen to in my car. Very rarely does the score come to mind in a Marvel movie while I'm watching it that makes me aware of it.
Yes.
And there were several times that little weird, quirky things done with this score, and dramatic things in the score, that this is a good piece of music on its own. So Giacchino, yes, you're right. A few times it did sound a little bit like the Star Trek music, but I liked it.
I agree. I thought it was great. And, you know, one of the things that I think this did very well, and that I think made this a great Doctor Strange movie, is it had that very psychedelic 70s feel to it. You know, we mentioned the Pink Floyd album. And
scene when he goes out into the astral plane, and I asked my son, what's your favorite scene? Well, all the little hands are touching him. I was like, that was trippy.
and you get that. And Doctor Strange was always very trippy in the comics, because you're dealing with magic and you're dealing with things that can't be explained. And this takes on that feel, and in that way, I think it was very well done. So, any other last thoughts, Nathan, before we...
No, I think that this is one of the better Marvel movies. It's a fun, enjoyable time at the theater, and there's been a little bit of a lull, I think, in having something that's really a lot of fun like that. And I, for taking so long to get Doctor Strange to the screen, you know, I can give them that, because of what they delivered in the terms of the Marvel template was a pretty good movie.
Yeah, agreed. All right, we're gonna go ahead and sign off. We'll catch you all later.
Take care.